This is WordPress Weekly, the show dedicated to all things WordPress. Here's your hosts, Jeff Chandler and Sarah Gooding.
Welcome to episode 156 of WordPress Weekly for Friday, August 1st, 2014. I am your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by someone we haven't heard from in a little while, Marcus Couch. Marcus, thank you for joining me on the program today.
Hey, it's my pleasure. It's great to be back here, Jeff. Always nice to be on the show, and boy, today we got a great one.
We sure do. We have a packed house. A little bit later on in the show, we're going to talk about crowdfunding with three gentlemen who have gone through and had a successful crowdfunding campaign experience. So we'll talk to them about that and, of course, all other things related to the subject of crowdfunding. But before we get into that, let's cover a few of the news-making stories this week. And the first is actually a big one. Jetpack has released 3.1, and this is actually features a complete rebranding and a couple of big-time features. So now there's a new logo, and it's no longer a Jetpack. It's like, it sort of reminds me of the triangle and asteroids a little bit, but there's two of
the
them.
In
a, yeah, the little ship, and there's two of them in a circle. And that signifies a new logo. Of course, there's with the text Jetpack. It actually looks, it's very much minimalism. It's simplified. Different than the great Jetpack. I'm not sure if at a glance it does a great job of signifying what it is or what it does outside of the Jetpack. But anyway, one of the new features is that it contains the portfolio custom post type. So this allows users to manage and showcase projects and is easily displayed using the portfolio shortcode. And there's actually word that they might incorporate more custom post types sort of as defaults in future versions of Jetpack, but they're looking at other projects and other discussions that are going on across the web related to the topic of sort of default naming conventions of custom post types. So we'll see what happens there. It would eventually allow standardization to occur so everybody's not coming up with these different ways of creating post types and what have you. There's also a feature that your theme developers are going to have to add support for, and it's called Jetpack Responsive Video. So if you add there's a simple line of code, add theme support, you would put in Jetpack Responsive Videos. Now all videos will look nice on mobile. There's a couple of JSON API endpoints for managing plugins and themes for the developers out there. There's also a slew of smaller feature changes. In fact, one of the features that I've seen here that some people say is their favorite, believe it or not, is that the smiley image used for stats is gone by default. apparently, that ticked off a lot of people, or they added code CSS that would hide that image by default, either because they didn't want to see it, or I'm not sure. I mean, it's unless you have like a light background, it's something I've ever rarely seen, but now it's gone by default, and a lot of people are happy about that. And there's also add a link to the configure page for stats, so that stats settings page is easier to find, so that's neat. And there's also been a couple of updated generic cons. So if you're using Jetpack, this is a great upgrade. You should have the update notification already. Do yourself a favor and update to the latest version and enjoy all of the goodness that Jetpack 3.1 has to offer. And I got to say that based on the comments on the post and from what I've seen on Twitter, they've done a great job improving the plugin, and maybe this will get some of the Jetpack haters off the wagon and actually, you know, maybe start to not so much embrace, but lessen their anger or hatred or disappointment with Jetpack because it's certainly improving as a plugin as a whole.
Yeah, you know, when I first saw Jetpack years ago, I sort of gave it the moniker of AOL for WordPress. You know, just it kind of dumbed it down. But actually, now they're incorporating so many features that other plugins and other things just can't do in such an integrated way that it's becoming a piece of radar that really you need to install on your site if you need, you know, certain elements that go to either your client or yourself that you need to convey. So Things like the portfolio short code, outstanding. And one of the things that I've done is even put video in that portfolio so that you can scroll through different videos and see the productions that are going on. So there's a lot to this particular update alone.
And isn't it funny that you can say when I first saw Jetpack years ago, and it's actually been 3 years now since Jetpack was right. released. It was actually launched in 2011. It's been around for a while. I think, you know, just time's flying by, but it's nice to see such huge improvements coming to Jetpack and pretty much every release. Even the point releases have some pretty cool stuff in them. So check that out. Let us know. Give some feedback. Send us some email. Leave some comments on the show notes post about what you think about the Jetpack rebranding and 3.1 overall. So great news for those in the Vietnam area. The first Vietnamese work camp is going to be held in Hanoi in September, September 6, 2014 to be exact. So a little bit more than a month away. And Work Camp Hanoi is actually born out of the Hanoi WordPress group, which is an active local meetup with nearly 300 members. So another example of a WordPress meetup gaining steam and then a WordCamp, you know, naturally becoming the next step after the WordPress meetup reaches a certain mass. As of last month, I think we covered this on the show, WordPress is now 100% translated into Vietnamese. So there's just a lot of great stuff happening in the Vietnamese WordPress community. So if you're interested in going to that event, you can find information about that on... They actually have a page. We'll link you up to that in the show notes. And I believe you can also find information for that at WordCamp Central on the upcoming WordCamps page. So congratulations to the Vietnamese community, and it'll be their first WordCamp. So it's pretty cool that we're still seeing, you know, across the world, areas that are having their first WordCamp, let alone their fifth or sixth.
Absolutely. I'm grinning ear to ear hearing this, because that alone, and I'd love to see some of their presentation videos too, and perhaps even some translations of that. And I think that we would do a service to others if we would translate some of our stuff as well, or, you know, at least use WPML to try and, you know, get through that language barrier, because WordPress is the thing that unifies us all in here, and, you know, plugins work no matter what language they happen to be in, as long as you can understand them. So I applaud that. It's great. And I love seeing all of the different places around the world that, you know, I only read about as a kid getting involved in WordPress and getting meetups and their own WordCamps. It's great.
So what do you think about this plugin or this service? It allows you, it's called LaunchKey Plugin. And what it does is it adds biometric authentication to WordPress. So now you could use your face or your fingerprint or thumbprint to log into WordPress, eliminating the need to use a plugin. So LaunchKey is a mobile authentication platform, and it's been pioneering multi-factor authentication for WordPress via its plugin since 2013. It's got a lot of great reviews, but right now the fingerprint scanning functionality is only limited to devices that give them access to the fingerprint scanner. So right now they only have access to the Samsung Galaxy S5, but as more devices with the fingerprint scan become available, they'll add support for them, such as iOS devices with the release of iOS 8. There is just pretty interesting. I guess how it works is you take a picture of yourself, you take 10 pictures, and that way it analyzes the specific features of your face. And then when you want to go to log in, you just take a selfie. So here we go again. You know, there's another great use of – this is actually a legitimate use of selfies. You can take a picture and it will log you in, and that way you don't have to use any passwords. And it's – I don't think it's a form of two-factor authentication. Maybe it is. I guess it would be because
– Yeah, sure. Here's the thing. It's if you recall, I reviewed LaunchKey when it first came out on the Tavern.
Oh, okay. I forgot.
The title of it was Failure to Launch, because I just couldn't get it configured properly. It just didn't do it for me, and that's what led me to Clef, which is the same principle except for the fact that rather than taking a picture of yourself and your face or whatever, you're taking a picture of a QR code on the screen that the Clef app actually recognizes, you know, much like a QR code, and taking a picture. The thing about taking a picture of your face, what's to stop me from just getting a picture of you, Jeff, and just holding it up to the phone and taking your face picture and having it let me right in?
I don't know. I don't think I've – I know they say that all biometric data collected for these new authentication factors is encrypted and stored locally on the device and not on launch key servers. But I think that, you know, that's for if you hack into it and you're trying to use the data or something. Actually, I don't know. I don't even know if that's – I mean, obviously, that's the first question, you know, I guess I would have in using this is, could I use a picture? Could I take a picture of you, or could I – like my Gravatar. You know, Gravatar shows me my image. I use it for Twitter. Could I use that? Or could I take my camera on my phone, take a picture of that Gravatar, and that would work? Those are good questions, but I don't have the answers to. We should try that out. We should do a test.
Grab something in a frame around your house, you know, just a picture of you and the wife, and zoom in on yourself and see if it lets you in.
I say that you and I do an experiment. We see if this works.
Okay. I'm ready.
All right. So, but that's pretty cool. Launch key. We have a write-up all about it and how it works on WPTaver.com. So if you're interested, check that out. Okay, so that pretty much rounds out the headlines for this week. What do you say we dive into this massively cool roundtable I've put together? We're going to talk a little bit about crowdfunding today. It's something that's been going on now for at least a few years. I don't know. It seems to be gaining in popularity. Crowdfunding, basically, the definition is you come up with an idea and you use one of these services, or you could do it on your own, actually, as we'll get to later on in the show, where you allow people to see your idea, and if they like it or they're interested in it, and it's something they think is worth paying for, they send you $1 or $2. You know, you set up these different tiers for different funding amounts depending on the interest level and also what you're willing to give back to thank those who fund for those amounts who funded you. And that's pretty much crowdfunding in a nutshell. The three people I have on the show today have actually gone through and have had successful crowdfunding campaigns, so I thought it'd be nice to bring them on, just have a general casual conversation about their experiences. Maybe some folks out there, listeners, might be able to pick up a thing or two in case they end up doing a crowdfunding campaign themselves. So I'm going to introduce the guest one by one, sort of give you a little intro as to who they are. First is Scott Kingsley Clark. He's a senior web engineer at 10Up. He's also the lead developer of the Pods framework and a number of other WordPress plugins in your repository. And he used Kickstarter in September of 2011. Now, he initially asked for $1,500, but he ended up with $4,177. $4,177 with 91 backers. So that's pretty good. And John Saddington, he's best known in the WordPress community for his work on the WordPress news site WP Daily, which was acquired by WP Engine nearly a year ago. And he's the lead developer of PressGram, an iOS app that allows you to capture, edit, and publish mobile photos to your site or blog. And he used Kickstarter in April of 2013, asking for $50,000. He ended up receiving $56,500 from 498 backers. And the last guest I have on is Nick Haskins, who's no stranger to WordPress Weekly. He builds third-party extensions for the WordPress platform, and he's been doing that for years, and he's also the lead developer of the ASAP Story Engine platform plugin and service. He used Crowdhoster in early 2014 and initially asked for $15,000. He ended up with $6,572 from 45 contributors. So not exactly, he didn't exactly get the amount that he requested, but he was still able to work with the amount. So gentlemen, not all at once here, thank you for joining me on the show and talking about the whole crowdfunding phenomenon.
Got to be here.
And that would be Nick. Scott?
Maybe he's on mute still, but this is John. Thanks for allowing me to be on.
Awesome. Oh, okay, there you are. So there's Scott. So we'll see how this works out.
Hey, so, Nick. So, before I forget, because I yet, but man, Aesop Story Engine looks, and has been something I've been looking at for a while. It looks badass. So,
hey, thanks. I appreciate that.
Oh man, it just, it looks cool.
Thanks, man. Trying to yeah, just trying to constantly make it better, like an obsession.
Yeah, I know what that's like.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Thanks, appreciate that.
So, Nick, as I mentioned in the little brief bio here, you initially asked for $15,000. You ended up with a little over $6,500. Did you manage to keep the funds? I mean, what sort of explained what happened there in that campaign? What did you end up doing at the end?
Well, we didn't hit our goal, so I was going to shut it down. And somebody suggested, it's actually CrowdHoster that suggested lowering it and just collecting what was there. So I emailed, you know, the people that had backed, you know, a couple of the top backers, and they said, go for it. You know, we submitted this to you, so we want to see it succeed. So we kind of pulled it, and we didn't, you know, kind of part of the plan was to do a hosted version, you know, aka medium.com, something like that. But we decided to just invest in getting the actual plugin finished. So, and in hindsight, that was probably better, because we wouldn't have been able to provide something awesome hosted wise. So yeah, it worked out pretty well.
So the other two gentlemen here ended up using Kickstarter, which is a service, and you used CrowdHoster instead of Kickstarter, any other number of services. Is there any particular reason or set of reasons why you opted to use CrowdHoster?
There is one reason, and that's because they reached out to me on Twitter and offered to help. And another reason was I was kind of worried about, you know, the branding aspect of it. But in hindsight, I wish I would have gone to Kickstarter, just because it's more, a little bit more mainstream. A little bit more people know about it. So if, when we do it again, if we do it again, it would be on Kickstarter. Absolutely.
Awesome. So, and that's, I guess that's one of the lessons you take away from the campaign. If you had to do it all over again, one of the things you do is use Kickstarter.
Yeah, and then making sure your message is clear and that you're directing it towards the right market, because we should have really pitched it to writers and then not so much the WordPress development space, so to speak. So that was another thing, is to make sure you're targeting it specifically to where you want it to be at. But it all kind of just started snowballing on its own. I never planned any of it. It just kind of took off on its own. So now it's just kind of grown organically, so to speak.
And Scott, most crowdfunding campaigns are aimed at creating, you know, a brand new product or service, or sometimes potato salad, which we'll get to a little later in the show. But at the time of the campaign, this is back in 2011, Pods already had an established following and user base. I'm just wondering, in retrospect, how do you think that played into the success of your campaign?
Well, I think that helped us a lot. I mean, we didn't really ask for a whole lot of money. And we, in retrospect, the money that we did receive wasn't a whole lot. So we really didn't have much of a problem based off of our existing project that we had and existing user base and word of mouth already from the naming. So, yeah, we didn't really have too much trouble because we were in that situation already. We already had something that was established.
And I think a lesson to take away from your campaign is that an existing product or service can be crowdfunded. It doesn't have to be a brand new idea.
Yeah. Well, essentially Pods, the version we kickstarted was Pods 2.0, which is a big rewrite, trying to bring it closer to WordPress core, extending WordPress objects, stuff like that. So there was a lot of work to do. There was a lot of UI stuff we wanted to do, and doing it all on our own was going to be quite difficult. So the Kickstarter really helped towards that.
So I'll start
I'd like to add also, though.
Go ahead, John.
You know, in terms of Scott's efforts, I mean, Kickstarter had barely really crossed like the 2-year mark as a company or an organization, and really it was only that year where it really built up steam. So, you know, Scott's ability to actually succeed in that very nascent, almost culturally irrelevant time of crowdfunding was is actually much to his credit. I was able to leverage 2 years later a lot of the cultural steam that had already been built up. So, you know, just huge props to Scott for achieving that so early on in Kickstarter's career.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, that's actually a great point because, you know, within that two-year time frame, there are so many projects, you know, I think maybe even the Pebble Watch and so many others that received huge amounts of crowdfunding, and the whole topic in Kickstarter was being covered on CNN and different news areas where it really became a thing, a viable option, and it really sort of grew this mass within those 2 years, which, as Jen mentioned, was able to take advantage of. That's a great point.
Yeah, once you have your users on Kickstarter, if you've Kickstarted one thing, you're totally much more apt to Kickstart something else. You already have the account. You're already familiar with how it works. You've already set up your Amazon account. You know, everything is very familiar to you, so you're more apt to do that. So, you know, back whenever I was running the Kickstarter campaign, there was a lot of people that were new, so that was definitely a barrier.
Yeah, and I think context is always incredibly important. And also, Scott had the third WordPress-related project of all time. So there's only two projects actually prior to Scott, as far as I can remember, that had actually been in existence. So, I mean, talk about nascent upon nascent, you know, opportunity.
And we're saying nascent, not nascent. Yeah. Just in case anyone's listening.
Can you guys describe, just for a moment, for those who aren't familiar, what the interaction level is like on a Kickstarter between yourselves who's trying to start a project and those who, you know, potentially are, you know, contributing to it? What kind of interaction did you find that may have been a little different than your typical, you know, end user cycle interaction?
Start with Scott on that one.
I think what you're asking is, like, how do I interact with the backers? Is that right?
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
Well, a lot of the money that we got from the pledges was a result of me sort of street campaigning across all the people I knew, all the clients I've had that I've used pods with, and trying to get people to back it that way. And communication with backers was easy because I knew a lot of the people, but there's also a lot of people that backed at lower levels that I was either not really familiar with, new users, or people who were just excited about what you could do with it. So my communication was mostly really grassroots, trying to get with people I already knew and already had established connections with.
And Jan, how about yourself? How was your interaction like with your backers, your many backers? Uh-oh. Might have lost John. Might still be on mute.
I was on mute earlier, and I unmuted myself, and then it still wouldn't let me talk, so I don't know.
Wow, that's crazy. So a bit of little Google foo going on there. Boy, that's crazy. Maybe you guys should just leave yourselves unmuted or something. I don't know. It doesn't matter. I could edit all this out in the end show. Only the people getting it live will be able to hear all this cool stuff. So this is a question I wanted to have everyone answer. Hopefully John can answer it if he can get unmuted, stupid Google. But we'll start with Nick. Nick, how did you determine the amount of funding that you needed?
to be honest, the number was very arbitrary. I would like to say that we came up with some calculation and, you know, based on this and that, but I'm a very frugal person to begin with, and I don't think things should cost a lot to do. so it was very arbitrary. I think the number came up with talking to a few colleagues. I think that's how we kind of finally came up with that end number. I was originally only going to ask for five because I felt that you know, there wasn't a lot left to do, but you know, of course, the more we had, the more things we could do. So might as well have gone big. So I think that's what we're
talking. Go big or go home.
Yeah, exactly.
So Johnny, we end up fixing your mic. You're muting. Why don't you go ahead and maybe leave the call, maybe rejoin. Maybe so we'll see if that works. And then we'll start with same question goes to you, Scott. How did you end up coming up with the number, which was incredibly low, but
yeah,
it looks like in retrospect that you ended up getting so much more than what you initially asked for. I mean, does that sort of let you know that maybe your initial number was way too low, or that you just had just an enormous amount of support? How do you look at it?
First of all, you can hear me, right?
Yes.
Okay. I was going to be sure. So let me paint you a picture here. And this is something I would caution every person that goes to start a Kickstarter or any crowdfunding campaign. There's a couple things here. First of all, I had a goal of $1,500.
Hello.
That was quite low. Yeah, we can hear you, John. And what we got was $4,177, which was a lot more than we asked for. And it was a great thing because we were able to do a lot more with it. But the problem was, even asking $1,500, even if I had asked for $4,000, it was not enough. Something my godfather, who has helped me in the past with business stuff, he taught me this after the fact. You try to ask for a little bit more than you think that you actually do need, because worst case scenario, if you ask for less and you get more, it's good. But the problem is, if you don't get enough, your project may sink. You may end up running into deadline, just delays and everything else. So if you don't ask for enough, then you may suffer, and everyone else who is supporting you may suffer. So from a business perspective, if you don't ask for a loan of enough money, you can't actually succeed, and then the bank will lose out, and everyone else will lose out who's involved. So that was a problem. I asked for two less. I got a lot more than I wanted, but it was still not enough.
Wow, that's a fantastic lesson. Hope people are taking notes out there. And John, you came up the price tag of $50,000 price for PressGram, ended up getting $56,500. How did you determine the amount that you were seeking, the funding amount that you were seeking?
Yeah, that's the financing part is actually an incredibly important part. It's one I didn't really consider too. I considered it to a degree, but I didn't know how important it would play out longer term. So it's a great thing for everyone who's listening. You really have to crunch the numbers, and in a lot of ways, it's a very objective way to determine if this is really the right step, because most projects are radically underfunded, and it's not for lack of passion. It's just literally lack of runway. So I have done consulting and price myself out for projects historically, and I have kind of a base rate of what I ask and I charge. And I asked for a very much smaller amount. I was essentially charging for my own time at $29 an hour, and I charge typically 10 times that. And I had estimated from what I could gather from the difficulty of the project about 1,400 hours of work, and which came around about $50,000. And then I added a few more for marketing and a number of other operational costs. That was a bad idea, because I should have probably priced it a little bit more to my the amount of time required, because it still required 100% of my time to work on it. And which means I wasn't making enough money to warrant actually building the product. And so I ran out of that runway almost immediately. And I was working on fumes, in addition to the fact that I actually went way over my estimation, which is typical. Like when you're building a product from scratch, and it was my first major kind of Objective-C iOS application in the space, instead of 1,400 hours, it was actually almost 1,900 hours. And so I went way under, and that was a really tough time for me as a professional. It was a really tough time for my family, who I'm the only breadwinner for my wife and my two girls. And man, it was really, really tough. There were some very dark nights where I thought, despite the funding, I just can't do this because I have no other time to dedicate to my other startup, which really was making money. and some of the other projects I was making. I was had to say no to a lot of the kind of the one-offs that I would do because I was fully dedicated to pulling this off. So that was a really challenging financial time, and I don't regret it, but I grossly underestimated the financial cost.
I find this to be fascinating because from someone who has, you know, from my perspective, I have no business sense. You know, I see you asking for $50,000, you get $56,000. I'm thinking, holy moly, this would be no problem. You can knock it out of the park because you got more than what you asked for. But hearing these experiences, wow, you know, it's the reality of the situation after you get the money. This is incredible stuff.
Yeah, I think, you know, in a lot of ways, and I believe – you know, Nick and Scott could probably back me up on this, but there's a lot of mythology, a lot of romanticism around crowdfunding in general, and it's like a neat way to do business and stuff. But at the end of the day, it is nothing different than just creating a sound product and creating a sound business model and strategy around it. It is very like all of the other ideas. It's just a different way of the financial part, and so you have to account for that financial part. So that it makes sense short and long term, and I didn't do a very good job of that. I'll just put it out there. I wish I had gotten more counsel around it.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, me too. But that's, you know, you learn, and then when the next one comes, and yeah, you know.
According to my wife, that'll be the first and the last time that'll do that.
So John, sticking with you, because you have experience in this area, what are the benefits of going the crowdfunding route versus raising capital through investors? You know, the whole crowdfunding aspect allows you to sort of remove the whole investor to a point where you don't have to present to VCs or angel investors, things like that. You're actually being funded by potential customers who think your idea, your product's awesome, and they want to be a part of it.
Yeah. Well, what's so funny, I think I've spoken this fairly plainly and openly, but I did go actually and raise a real round of capital from VCs because the cost of maintaining that social network and kind of layer in the data costs were just a monstrosity. And that was actually somewhat of a surprise as well for me. So I got annihilated on that end as well. But, you know, so to answer your question, though, It's just a different way of raising capital, and you may not necessarily have the overhead and the oversight of like a board or people that you know you necessarily owe direct you know funds to, but in some ways, depending on who you are as a person, you know, managing a board or a number of investors or one institutional investor is much better than managing 500 people, you know, 500 individual expectations and, you know, just multiply the amount of emails that you might get from an investment group by 500 times. And that might cause a lot of heartburn for some. So I think you know, if someone's considering this, which I'm not trying to be pejorative or negative, I think you should definitely consider it because it can be very powerful. I think you really need to look as best as you possibly can at the greater picture of who am I as a person, and is this something that I can really take on if it succeeds? Do I have the support, you know, behind me, a team dedicated to kind of come on board and work through this operationally? And if not, then you know, maybe kind of level set your expectations in a different way.
And Nick, you know, you wanted to create a hosted service for ASOP Story Engine, something that possibly could take to investors. Was that something you were thinking about, maybe putting a proposal together, or did you just opt for the crowdfunding route?
I think in hindsight, I don't think we were ready when we initially did the whole campaign. So thinking back at it, I'm almost glad it kind of didn't work out because, like I said before, we wouldn't have been able to do it as good as I wanted it to. So now that the plugin has grown and matured a little bit and continues to mature, that's something that people have been asking about and continues to be an option, but just would require either, you know, a round of VC or another crowdfunding method, which was good to hear from John on his experience with both, because that's something that, you know, I constantly go back and forth with, you know, do you get in bed with somebody or do you get in bed with 500 people? So, so, <to speak. laughs> so yeah, it's good stuff.
It'd be one big bed.
That would be one big bed.
And, they were, and my backers, I know a few of them, if not a handful of them, are listening in on here. My backers were amazing. I mean, they're incredibly supportive. There are always a number of bad eggs in the bunch, but that you can't help that. But for the vast majority, and I really do mean that, the vast majority were incredibly supportive and still are, and we're still evangelizing and sharing the news of Pressgram. So super props to the group that came around me.
And we'll go starting with you, Scott, since you also did a crowdfunding campaign on Kickstarter. I'm always kind of curious, how do you come up with these packages or things to give backers? Is it just out of the blue things you're thinking of that you just put on there that you think will be of value, or do you get help, or do you ask around, hey, what would you like, and you just set up the tiers? How did you come up with your different backer levels?
Well, you could do any of those. For me, I chose to just sort of think up what might be, you know, useful to people. What would I sort of try to associate the pledge amounts with time involved.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, another thing to keep in mind is like if you offer additional things, like I did, like upgraded assurance reviews, additional features, consulting time, stuff like that. If you offer those things alongside of saying, okay, well, I'm also going to produce Pods 2.0, then you're sort of double booking yourself because now you're in charge of also doing these other things as well as, you know, still produce Pods 2.0 and have that go on time. So that's another part to be aware of. You know, we had 91 backers, so there was a lot of stuff to follow up on, a lot of people to communicate with. That's another big chunk of time. Just to manage, you know.
Ugh, Scott speaks the truth.
And somehow I'm going to manage to upgrade everyone and do all this stuff. And just a lot of stuff to be dedicating yourself towards on top of just having people fund your project. So, I mean, it's a double-edged sword. You can have your packages and offer some really cool things, but you really, probably my experience, you probably want a more directly make those things associated to completion of the project itself and not necessarily maybe alongside or an addition to.
Yeah, I totally concur. Managing 500 people and shipping swag packs, not just domestically but internationally, was heartbreak. I mean, just printing labels. I mean, everyone has experience trying to print labels on a inkjet. I mean, trying to... And then dumping that at a local post office box where the ladies, gals behind the you know desk are like just looking at you and they're just thinking you are insane. That actually was a major financial cost that I lost a ton of money on. I had no idea that shipping a package of even just a t-shirt and a couple stickers to like Australia for all you Aussies out there was like $35. And I was asked for only like $9 shipping, and so every time I shipped international, I was losing so much money, and that was a total fail on my part.
No, I believe that. Yeah, you know, I've been talking about this for a while. You know, one of the things I think about with regarding the crowdfunding campaigns is that I think you only have one shot to get it right. Starting with Nick, would you agree with that? That maybe you have one shot to get the money you're asking for, so you got to have all your ducks in a row, your T's crossed, your I's dotted, so there's almost no question left unanswered for people who may consider giving you cash.
Yeah, you don't get a second chance on making a good first impression. I think taking your time and definitely making sure everything is in line, getting feedback from more people. Making sure the levels are put out and thought out good. Yeah, we could have done a lot of things differently. Definitely.
Because I bring it up recently because I know there's a project called Version Press, and they recently did a self-hosted crowdfunding campaign, and it wasn't successful, and I think some of it in large part had to do with there was some the licensing wasn't clear when they launched a campaign, and there were some other questions that people wanted answers to, and I just think some of that maybe played a role into not being able to get as much money as they thought they would get. So, I mean, it was sort of a reality check for me that if you're going to, you know, do a crowdfunding campaign, you better be ready. You better have everything up front, what you're offering, what you're going to do, and be as direct as possible and answer as, you know, as many questions as possible. And I know on Kickstarter at the bottom of the page, and even on, Nick, your specific page for the campaign, there's a FAQ section, you know, for commonly asked questions. And it's definitely worth using that area of those campaigns to give answers to some of the most frequently asked questions.
You know, it's interesting, and Jeff, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I haven't tracked VersionPress, or I didn't even know that they were doing crowdfunding, but the moment you said that they weren't clear on their licensing, I mean, you wouldn't even have to tell me that it wasn't success, because the WordPress crowd is so, you know, effing, interested in licensing that if you don't have that straight, then, like, you're sunk. So that's obviously relevant.
That it, not me. I mean, I already know that. I mean, I got chastised for trying to convince them, hey, you know, you might want to look into being licensed this way because this is how the WordPress community is. This is how it's licensed. This is how I think you'll be portrayed if you go this way instead of that way. And eventually they came around doing the GPL licensing thing, but, you know, it was a couple days after the fact, and I don't know if they were able to recoup or not. I actually spoke with them, and they actually told me that, you know, looking at their stats, they didn't see a huge increase after announcing that they would be GPL licensed. I mean, they saw a bump, but they didn't see a huge increase like they thought they would, as if it was that big of an issue. So I don't know.
I tried to back them, but they wouldn't accept credit card. It's only PayPal. And so I think that's another major, in my opinion.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's another... I have some utter disdain towards PayPal to begin with. So I didn't back them because I was going to back them pretty heavily. But no credit card option.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about this a little bit. You know, they self-hosted their crowdfunding campaign because Kickstarter was not available where they were in their country.
Hmm.
Not able to use Kickstarter. They were in one of the countries, Czech Republic, I think it is. I hope I got that right, Czech Republic. Or one of those areas over there you couldn't use Kickstarter. So they did the self-hosted crowdfunding campaign, and I wonder maybe that I'll tell you an interesting dynamic that I experienced specifically with the VersionPress campaign is that because they didn't use Kickstarter, because it was self-hosted, because they weren't clearing the licensing, and because there were two software developers that not a lot of people, if anyone, in the WordPress community known, you know, they had no idea who these people were, and they were from another country, there is this big issue of trust. Are these two legit? Is this a real thing? Are they just trying to get our money? What's going on? And that was sort of an interesting thing from the whole self-hosted crowdfunding campaign dynamic. And I guess it didn't help that nobody knew who they were. I mean, they were VersionPress is supposed to be a WordPress plugin that synchronizes with the database. It's like the Undo for WordPress. It tightly integrates between Git and your database, and you can undo changes. So it was a WordPress thing, but yet not a lot of people in the WordPress crowd or community knew who they were. So I think that played a large part in their campaign not being successful as well. So I'll just start with Nick. What do you think? Do you think that crowdfunding, self-hosted crowdfunding campaigns are something to consider, something to use, or would just people would be better off using established services nowadays, such as an Indiegogo or Kickstarter?
If I were to do it again, I would do it on Kickstarter. If I were to start a new one, I would probably do it on Kickstarter. I would like to see a few more come out on various platforms to kind of gauge a good answer on that one. Because what's interesting is I'm seeing this pattern. I think Pods raise, I can't remember the number, a little less than five. We raise six. VersionPress raised six. So it doesn't seem like the WordPress open source space can muster more than $5,000 or $6,000 for a plugin. It seems like, so I would like to see more crowdfunding opportunities come up to kind of gauge is this a recurring pattern, because it seems like so far, yeah, definitely location of it and the amounts seem to have a pattern to them.
Yeah, I would answer the similar. I think there are a lot of pros and cons, but I think Kickstarter is such a powerful name. And for those, if you've ever been in the back admin of Kickstarter, it's one of the prettiest and most fluid, exactly feature-rich type of it is a well-done application. It was a joy to actually use their service back-end administrative panel. And that you can't beat. Even some of the self-hosted I've seen, they just don't have that fluidity of a dedicated application, serviced application. But the network effect is huge with Kickstarter because they leverage they can internally drive people who may not necessarily be what were interested in backing your project, but they can jump through the categories and some of the features to land on. And so a lot of the funding that I got was actually indirect traffic, people who were just browsing Kickstarter.com looking for something to throw some money at. And as weird as that might sound, that was a huge boon for me, just people just crawling the site. I think to be very successful in independent self-hosted, you have to have a religious following already, or it's such a killer product that has such an obvious value that it would be an overwhelming win. But if you don't have that in place or in play, the network effect on Kickstarter is hard to ignore.
As an administrator, does it allow you direct access to communicate to previous backers for new projects?
I still have access to all of the backers, and I can email them out globally if they've opted in to see that email, or they can go to the site and they'll see a notification in their kind of admin. So even when I plan on launching my next application that's somewhat similar, I plan on hitting those up because a lot of those backers are in the same vein. I've done a good job of converting a lot of those backers into my newsletter, so I don't have to go into the two places. But it is a great communication system, and it's getting even better.
Yeah, it almost seems like once you have a backer, it almost would take on a political model as far as contributions. You know, that same kind of communication cycle as to what your development process is at the time, you know, how far along you are, and then what new things have come about, and even I assume that all of you guys probably point to other projects that you feel are deemed worth backing as well, correct?
Yes. I'll just jump in real quick. Before I had even did mine, I had backed over 200 projects independently.
Oh, yeah.
So I was a huge fan. I've taken a break because my wife said it's not a store, you know. it's definitely not a store where you actually get most of the stuff because most of the stuff doesn't actually come. But, yeah. So she's like, you should need to take a break. But so I'm a huge fan of it even before I did my own project. So for sure.
Did you contribute to the potato salad Kickstarter?
I did not. That was weird. I think I definitely browsed it a couple times because I was curious. But I don't believe that I don't think I backed that one. No, I did. I did back the coolest cooler though recently. Have you guys seen that one? That thing is. They're 28 days ago. It's at 7.8 million. They were asking for $50,000. They have almost $8 million. Wow. I backed that because I'm going to use that. But so yeah, that's what I've recently backed.
Wow, that's on the same vein of success as, let's say, the Reading Rainbow campaign, where he initially asked for a certain amount and got 2, 3, 4 times that. No, it's just I see that stuff and, you know, it's like I wonder what would happen if I put on there, you know, hey, everybody, let's get together and pay off my mortgage. You know, some crowdfunding campaign like that. It's like it's real tempting for me to go on there and see if that works. But I know that's not how it works and nobody would give me any money because there's no gain for them, you know, involved with it. And it would, you know, on the topic of, you know, I keep bringing up this potato salad thing. It was initially like a joke, you know, for $10, let's see what happens. And it just caught steam. It was on this site, that site. And
why does Kickstarter even accept that, though? That is weird.
Kickstarter allowed it, and they just pretty much said, you know, backers get to determine what gets backed and what's not. So it was in the backers' hands, and I think the backers, a lot of them were just said, you know, this is funny. I want to actually see this guy make $35,000 with a potato salad. you know, it kind of came off as a joke, and some people were overreacting. Now, maybe I'll just get your thoughts on it. Does something like the potato salad Kickstarter campaign, which started off as a joke, does that do more to harm?
I think so.
Sort of the credibility of the whole crowdfunding space, or is it really just, are we all just overreacting?
I think it's a mockery of the whole space. I think it's devaluing to just back anything. I'm just going to shave off some of my back hair and put it on there, and I want to raise $40,000.
It's like it should be professional to the level of where you were actually going to use whatever product or idea that you had, and you were in a room pitching people to invest in it. That should be the seriousness of it, and you certainly it's not appropriate to bring, you know, potato salad to the table with that. So I agree with you guys in that sense.
It kind of puts what the three of us have done, you know, Nick, Scott, and myself, in the amount of blood, sweat, emotion, and tears, and it kind of is just like, you know, really, you know, it really does. I mean, I can't be too negative because anything goes and it's their site, but at the same time, it makes me feel like, you know, WTF.
Yeah. I see that when Font Awesome right now is at, you know, for a font, they have $71,000 raised for a font.
Mm.
So, yeah, they're on Kickstarter right now. So I'm like, man, come on.
Well, I know, Nick, you recently said it looks like $5,000 to $7,000 is the limit. I know, and this has nothing to do with the product or anything, but sometime in 2013, Justin Tadlock actually put out a post where he was looking. He finally found he had an opportunity to get a new house, but he needed $5,000 to either for the loan or for closing or something or what have you. And the WordPress community gathered together. He ended up with like $7,000. So. Yeah.
I'll pack that.
So I'm still waiting for the invitation to go down to his house, have a barbecue. But it just goes to show you that even for aspects like that, not a product, not a service, just a good deed. And of course, I think, as John has been talking about before, Justin Tadlock is somebody that's given a lot to the WordPress community. Through forum posts, through his plugins, through themes, through his tutorials, and I think this is just sort of a way for all of us to give back to him.
You know what's neat is, do you know Jen
Milo.
Jen Milo.
The bakery.
Yeah, she did the bakery on, was it Savannah or Hilton Head? I can't remember. And so,
I think it was Tybee and it was Jitterbug. Yeah,
right. So Tybee Island, and she used Kickstarter to help fund, you know, that, and I think that was awesome. I think, you know, she's a part of the WordPress community. It wasn't WordPress specific, but it was leveraging that, and I think that was a cool give back. And she raised, you know, she definitely got her mark, $15,000, $16,000, $17,000 or something. So I think that's really cool. I think that's how to do, you know, leverage your own network for something that might be relevant to the WordPress community, but as outside. And I don't think that's a mockery at all of leveraging that network type of thing.
And she also hit those same issues that we all three of us talked about. You know, she had additional costs, additional delays due to things that were out of her hands, and it was a lot for her to manage.
Yeah, especially with the building, the codes, the coolers, all that went into effect. I will say, I'll go on the record and say that I backed her, and I did get a goodie gift package, and everything she baked, everything that was in there tasted delicious. So that was cool. Scott, I'll start with you, and I want to get everybody's take on this. Scott, if your crowdfunding campaign failed to the point, you know, where you didn't receive the amount of funds you requested, would you have continued on with making Pods 2.0?
Well, I have a unique perspective to this because I didn't have enough to make it work, even though I got more than I asked for.
You know, I'll give you some info here. I started the campaign just about a month before it ended, so sometime around September, early September, and the campaign ended September 23rd. I didn't get the cash for another week because Amazon payments waits a week for you to be verified of some sort. Then the money transferred to the bank, and all the while I had initially planned for the development to be done while I had the Kickstarter going, but that time frame ended, and I ended up having to depend on contractors, and I had to get new contractors in, and then they were unable to start soon enough, so I had to wait for them to fit me into the schedule, and then I ran out of money. And then I had to go into credit. A company called Fifth Room Creative, John Guberman over there, he actually had his developer work on pods for me on credit, so I was able to pay him back in installments, which was really nice of him. Like, we probably would have failed if that hadn't happened. And then I approached Matt Mullenweg from Automattic and said, hey, you know, I'm having some trouble here. I can't seem to get this working right. Can you give me some feedback? And we talked for a while, and Automattic became a sponsor of it. So, you know, a lot of things came together to help push it to the next level. But, you know, I wish it wouldn't have been that way. I wish I would have had enough. I wish I would have known what it was going to take and planned it out better. But there was a lot of things to consider, like fees. You know, there was 10% of fees to Amazon and Kickstarter. So, like, things that you just don't really think about affecting you, but at the small scale of $5,000, it affects you a lot.
Well, that's one thing I'm fortunate about. We didn't have – ours was free, zero fees. It was CrowdHoster. I think they were testing this new host yourself but still using our platform type. So they didn't take the 1.5% that they normally did. So that's interesting. It's interesting there. I never would have thought had that happen. If we have not would have raised a month, we probably still would have done it.
It just would have been a lot harder and more difficult to do.
Yeah, because you know my skills only go so far, so it would have not been as good the first time around.
And how about you, John? Would PressGram? Would you have? Did you believe enough in it? Did you just know that it would work, and would you have put in all that effort even if you didn't reach $50,000?
That's a tough question. The answer is kind of yes and no. Yes, I would have continued it, but not in the version that I shipped. The version that I shipped to the public was considered some of the features that I knew that they wanted that I didn't necessarily want or need. And so, for example, the social networking part of it, I wasn't a super fan. I eventually stripped that out in version 2, but I would have never created that part if it wasn't for the Kickstarter. So I would have, in a form, I would have finished it, but not the version that I actually shipped.
And with the $50,000 goal, crowdfunding goal, how bad did the fees hurt you?
They took 6 to 6.5-7% total. Kickstarter then. Amazon combined. Interestingly, you said that it took you a week. It took me 30 days to collect from Amazon. So whatever happened to you, which is awesome that you got it so fast, it took me 30 days, and that was a long 30 days.
Yeah. Well, I contacted Amazon support, and I created a stink, and you know, I'd been an Amazon customer. I tried to make them do whatever, and they were able to do something. I don't know what it was, but I got it within a week, which was
wow. That's
they
awesome.
Said it was 30 days. I was like, oh my god, how am I going to do this?
Yeah, that's amazing that he did it so quick. Because I mean, just for a month, I was you know sleepless. I was like, is this in my yes? Oh my god.
Yeah. So well, I've only
it's
got
not it. Exactly like winning the lottery, like everybody thinks. Like, hey, the guy's here with the cash. All right.
Yeah, he actually came to my doorstep.
So I got just two more questions here, and then we're going to wrap it up. Now, the one thing I wouldn't be able to – I mean, getting the money, doing the funding, getting the information, putting the ideas together, that seems like the hard part. But, John, with so much money you were asking for and you ended up getting it and then some, how was that – how did you deal with the stress? How did you deal with the pressure that, okay, I've got the money, now I got to do – what's necessary in order to deliver because I crowdfunded. It's sort of like a big promise. If you give me this money, this is what you'll get. I mean, how stressful was that for you, the pressure?
Incredibly so. I mean, all of us on this podcast are creators. We've, you know, are building product. And for many of those who are listening, you're going to be very empathetic. I mean, building a product and building software, you know, a project or a product can be very lonesome. And very much so. I didn't have a team around me helping me build this. It was me late at night and the weekends, and that can get super depressing. I hate to be that guy, but that's just the reality. And then you add the pressure of a family, an existing startup that's trying to continue to grow and be profitable, a wife and two kids who are demanding your attention and who deserve all the attention that they need. There were definitely some difficult nights where I just felt like this was one of the stupidest ideas of my life. and so I don't think I managed it perfectly well. I think I managed it just enough to survive and be very thankful for it. But for those listening, I guess I'm just trying to paint a realistic picture that this is not get the money, go out, get drunk, feel great about yourself. It's you get the money and then it's what have I just done? And did I really think that it was going to be this easy? I don't know.
I think it's valuable that you share that, because oftentimes, people see these projects and see these big, whatever press names and think that it's sort of an overnight thing, and it's nothing of the kind. And it's really about stress, and even the stress that you put on your family and your loved ones to make these things happen, just so that you can create a service or a plugin or something like that that the WordPress community can use. So a lot goes into this, a lot more than just code.
Yeah, and I think that's probably one of the biggest things with the open source community that I feel is still has to mature globally, is I don't think that you can appreciate the amount of work that someone contributes to open source until you go and build something for the open source community. And you realize, how few and far between the credit goes, the support, how many complaints per actually, an attaboy email you get. And I think everyone who participates in the open source community should build a small plugin, should, open source it, should experience what it's like to create support with no pay, and just to say, holy cow, like, this is an amazing ecosystem, and I need to be a better contributor to it.
I agree. Yeah,
if I could just save bucks for a second.
Yeah, no, I agree. Even, we as an open source community even have problems giving star reviews in the repository. You see plugins that have 500,000 downloads, but 3 reviews, and that's just crazy.
Yeah, that's broken.
So how about you, Nick? How much pressure and stress were you under once you, you didn't exactly get the 15,000, but you got enough. I mean,
yeah.
How did you deal with that stress and pressure afterwards?
There actually wasn't. I don't think there was much of any at all. I think if it would have had been a year or so ago, there probably would have been a lot. But that December, I started full time managing a WordPress install for a very big education company online, CG Cookie, and they take good care of me there, and the family is taken well care of. So this was very much there wasn't a lot of stress there. There was a lot of time away from them, of course. As John said, but yeah, I think had it been a lot longer ago without me having a full time job, it probably would have been a lot more stressful.
And I got one last question here, and I'll start with Scott. The WordPress community for the longest time, WordPress is free as in it doesn't cost anything. And the commercial, we've seen a lot of growth and a lot of opportunity in the commercial plugin space, definitely with commercial themes. There are people, a large audience, willing to pay for those things, but then there's an even probably larger audience that thinks, well, WordPress is free, everything else should be free, this plugin should be free, everything should be free, and they have a problem paying $1 for anything. And so I wonder, I'll put this question to you, with that mindset, with that mentality, is it possible for somebody to come up with a great idea for a plugin? I mean, we've seen what happens with VersionPress, but somebody else comes up with a great idea for a plugin, and they say, well, it's going to take me $30,000. Is it even possible for that campaign to be successful if the audience is WordPress users, WordPress people, and also WordPress developers, considering their mindset already, in the WordPress ecosystem?
Well, we had hit that same issue where we had people you know, using our plugin for free, and then we had this Kickstarter to charge the money, and then they were concerned, are we going to always be a free plugin, you know, all that sort of thing. That stuff was definitely a concern for people to actually contribute. I don't know if WordPress crowdfunding has hit a sort of a glass ceiling here in terms of, you know, how viable is it for another person to come out and do one and make it really successful. It all depends on the ideas and the people involved. But, I mean, if you're going to start a plugin as an individual, like on your own, without a partner or without a company backing you, it's definitely going to be very difficult, especially if it's going to be a free plugin. And you know, if you are a company like, you know, I work at 10Up. If you're a company at 10Up and you back a project internally and you use it for your projects like Varying Vagrants, then it's easier to produce something that's free because you have a vested interest in the project. You're pumping time into it and you're also using it on your projects, which is saving you time. So, it's a lot easier for a company to produce a free plugin or a free project than it would be for an individual. So crowdfunding from an individual may be quite a difficult task, especially nowadays after so many things are already out there. You have to have a really solid idea that's new, fresh, that people are willing to pay you for, but it be free. And more importantly, that you can offer them something in return for their the backing pledge.
How about you, Nick? You have any thoughts on that? I mean, we've already spoken about maybe a 5,000 to 7,000 plateau. I mean, is it, you know, can somebody come up with a good plugin idea and say, hey, I need $15,000 and that's what it's going to take for me to develop this. And hey, when I'm done, it'll be free and open source, GPL license, yada, yada. We can have a party. You know, do you think that's possible with the mindset I've just described?
I don't think so right now, but I would love for somebody to prove me wrong. I think you're going to have to reach outside of the WordPress space. I think you're going to have to, you know, to take our, you know, project, for example, to reach out to the publishing industry is a lot bigger than the WordPress developer industry and the more people who are actively, you know, using WordPress and contributing to WordPress. So I think that plays a major role. The space you're pitching to, and of course how your active following, you know, you have, of course, if you have more followers and you're kind of popular that way, then that's probably going to help a lot more too.
Yeah, I can definitely double up on that because the majority, not vast majority, but the majority, so over 50% of my backing came from the photographic industry, the photographers, the semi-professionals, the professionals. I got some serious, very lucky wins on some major kind of motion picture and photography blogs. And those were entirely unearned. I had some friends in the industry, but I wasn't planning on having that as a major source of backing, and they really flocked around and said, this is so cool, and never really thought about it this way. And so I got lucky in kind of stumbling upon that entirely by accident, and so I was very thankful for that group to come around it.
Awesome. Fantastic. All right, so I'm going to wrap this up here. Guys, this has been a great conversation. I love having you all on here telling me about your experiences, and hopefully the people out there have learned a few lessons, especially, you know, I just really find it fascinating, the reality of what happens after you get the money. That's pretty incredible stuff, you know, dealing with the stress and everything else. Starting off with you, Scott, are you how's Pods development going, and where can we get your contact details and follow you on Twitter?
Pods is going great. I'm in the middle of working on the next big feature, which is for Pods 3.0, loop fields. We've been working on it for a few years, trying to get the UI, the API right, and manage supporting the project, handling bug fixes, and various other things that happen during the course of a project. Sort of spread thin a bit, but we have 7 people on our team now, so that's really awesome. The site is pods.io. And my Twitter is Scott K. Clark, just all normal characters.
Now, are you going to crowdfund 3.0 this time? Or?
No. No, luckily we didn't need to. We have some people feature funding certain things, and that's definitely helping a lot. Feature funding is a great alternative to crowdfunding where, you know, someone needs a feature for their project, they're willing to chip in some money for it, so it helps.
This is a random aside. Tell me about the Pods Foundation. How does that play into the development?
Sure. So basically all the money we get goes into Pods. I don't put it in my bank account and say, oh, I'm going to go buy pizza today. It's usually, you know, we don't even get that many donations, but maybe 100 donations total, maybe less since 2008. So really, we don't get a whole lot of donation funding by itself, but feature funding helps a lot. And all that money goes towards covering cost of hosting, paying people to help handle support, because we have a lot of support needs. We have two people on support staff now, one person starting on unit testing, another secondary developer who helps on working features, a server guy. There's a lot of costs involved in maintaining a project at this level.
Yeah.
For a free plugin with no other income service, income sources beyond automatic sponsorship. So we're doing pretty well for ourselves considering all of that. But yeah, the foundation is structured in such a way that it's not for profit. We don't make money off of it. It all goes back into the project.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's great.
And Nick, what are you working on for ASAP Story Engine? I know you just pushed out a release.
Can we follow you? Better theme compatibility. We left it, you know, when I originally kind of designed it, came with no CSS, just so you wouldn't have to battle with unstyling crap and then doing what you wanted, but I quickly learned that there's a lot more users than developers, so that this release we made it easier with add theme support, piece of code snippet you just add in. Other than that, doing well for a free plugin, been profitable since month one. ASAP buys us pizza every now and then, but other than that, my full-time job pays our bills, and the income that comes in through ASAP through our themes that are selling, we use that money to kind of get a hold of designers to kind of design some really awesome themes, kind of put those out. Money goes into feature development for 1.1, which is supposed to come out before WordPress 4.0. So yeah, lots of unspoken awesome things coming up.
Just because I have you on the air right now, just a question. There's all these enhancements going on with the customizer in WordPress. How does that affect what you're going to be doing or adding features to ASAP, you know, theme specific or just ASAP in general?
Well, theme specific, it doesn't hurt us at all because we don't have option panels. It's all through theme customizer, and the themes maybe have three options each. So there's not a lot going on there, and whatever happens update-wise, we tend to just be compatible with. The story engine generator is going to be rebuilt. We are waiting on WP View API to be built out for WordPress 4.0, which is still in a kind of experimental phase. It's not going to be built out fully, but it's going to give you those edit icons, kind of how you can edit the gallery and edit the audio and video playlists now in WordPress. But they're going to extend it out to shortcodes so that any shortcode entered could hook into the WP View API through TinyMCE. Then be able to toggle this edit icon and be able to edit those attributes. So we're working as close to core as we can in that regard.
Because I was just thinking, sort of, I don't know if this is doable or if this would just create a mess. If somehow you could utilize the customizer and you have all these different, you know, you have, what is it, 12 different modules that you can use to build a story. Well, using the customizer, what if you could create a custom look and feel to that specific story that's sort of outside the scope of what the theme already offers?
Yeah. Well, some themes, some of our themes give you individual story design. We kind of painting the picture, like the newest one we just released today, actually, each individual story can have an accent color, so it changes all those components to that accent color. But for the most part, we leave the paint jobs to the themes, and we put the functionality into ASAP.
Awesome. So sounds like a project's coming along, and some of the themes, some of the stories I've seen really utilizing ASAP Story Engine I've been impressed by them.
Yeah, I've seen the Detroit News. There's Auburn University, Duke University, Penn State. There's a lot of universities that are starting to kind of implement it now. So we're pretty excited to kind of deliver more tools to make that process easier for them.
Awesome. Well, keep up the good work. And last but not least is It's JSAT, as we found out in being in the show.
That would be incorrect. No one.
What's life been like for you, man? What have you been up to since WP Daily ended up in the hands of WP Engine?
Yeah, well, a couple of things. PressCran development is still going on. There's a big iOS 8 update that's coming up in the next 2 months, as well as the new OS 10 Yosemite version. So I'm still working on that. I am a partner in an education and kind of a venture company, and so we teach software engineering, specifically JavaScripting, Ruby on Rails, and Objective-C iOS programming. And I have 10 campuses here in the States, and I'm looking at internationals. But we train in kind of a 12-week, fully intensive boot camp style. And so we teach junior level developers to be junior level developers, and that's been growing like crazy. I've grown that company from 4 full time staff in December to over 30 actually this month. So we are hitting a huge growth spike, and I can be more happy about educating kind of the next round of software programmers. So I'm so stoked about that. In addition to that, though, and that's where most of my time is spent, though, I have a smaller app, an OS 10 app that I've been developing. Huge passion project. I've been blogging for now 14 years every day, and I love publishing. I love blogging. Will always be a major part of my life. So I'm building a desktop publishing client for OS 10 called Desk App, or desk.pm is the website, desk.pm, and PM stands for publishing machine, so it's desk publishing machine. And I've got 50, 55 alpha testers. I'm going to do some major marketing probably in the next month or so, but looking to release that probably this month, hopefully. I've got a little bit more bugs to work out, but I'm really passionate about that. And if that makes zero money, that would be really sad, but it would be awesome if it did.
Have you considered crowdfunding the development?
Yeah.
Of it?
Yes, for 1 second, and then I realized that I want to stay married, and I really...
you like your roof.
Yeah, my wife and I are celebrating our nine years this year, so...
Congratulations.
Thanks, and just to think about a decade is just unbelievable, but that we're closing in on that. So, but that's coming out, and you know, I'll shoot you an email, of course, Jeff, at some point, so you can take a look in. I'd be curious about your feedback because you're in everyone in this room here is in that world, in the publishing world. So,
I'm especially interested to see, you know, A, the interface, B, how it works, how it connects, and if it's a better publishing or writing experience than actually having to log in to the WordPress backend itself or using their Press This bookmarklet. I'm looking for something that's standalone desktop. I don't have to worry about the performance of the web server. Only when I'm sending up the post and the images to the actual web servers. When
I could actually send you an alpha copy. It's fully functional. It is an alpha, so there's stuff that will not work, but it'll do the vast majority, and I'd love to get some feedback from you.
Or, yeah, Marcus will try it out. I'll try it out. Send, you know how to contact me. I'd love to test it out for you, see how it's like. And,
well, let's give you a sneak peek.
Definitely. And what's your website? Where can we find you, your progress, Twitter account?
At Saddington is my Twitter. John, john.do is kind of my main blog, and everything else is linked on the sidebar there, so you can check that out.
And before I let all of you go, I want to say, because I had this opportunity, John, I appreciated your work and efforts on WP Daily. You were a machine. I don't know how you did that on a daily basis. I can't. Even if on my best day, even when I drink 10 Mountain Dews, I can't replicate what you did. So I just want to say thanks for everything you did. It was great content, and thank you for keeping the archive. You know, having that be there, and it's under Torque Mag now, but I mean it's there. The archive's there, and all that stuff you published, the stories, the stuff, the archive, things that you know at the time the tavern was sort of. in hiatus. You know, it was you and WP Candy at the time that were really rocking and rolling the whole landscape. So there's a lot of stuff on there that I don't have, you know, and I need to reference that all the time. So just, I appreciate your decision to keep the archive available, and just, you know, my personal thanks for what you did on WP.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for keeping the news and editorial scene alive. I mean, it's what the WordPress world needs, an independent, at least as far as we can tell, an independent voice, and we need more people in the space. I think that's just good for the economy. So thanks for that.
Hear, hear.
Awesome. So thank you all. Thank you, gentlemen, for being on the show. I now release you. I now release you. It's Friday, so you guys go and have a good time. Me and Marcus got to stick around because, Marcus, you have a couple of crowdfunding plugins that you can tell our audience about in case they want to get on the crowdfunding bandwagon and use WordPress to do it. So
yeah, well,
all right, guys. Thanks.
Thanks a lot. Have a good one, John.
Well, later.
See you guys later.
You guys. One way to do it, actually, I got three different plugins here to talk about. One is the Kickstarter Tracker widget. This is something that even if you're not funding, or if you're just a funder, actually, of a project and you'd like to share that with others, it allows you to kind of put the Kickstarter ID in there and tells the percentage funded, the number of backers, the current amount funded, and it has a call to action in which people can participate as well. So it's kind of a dual function plugin. And those of you out there might be using the Fundify theme, and if you are, to use your crowdfunding efforts to the max, there's a plugin called Fundify Crowdfunding that lets you integrate that into easy digital downloads. So if you want to give out some of those goodies and not have to deal with shipping problems and logistics like we talked about here in the show, this might be a good one for you because it actually releases after specific funds are met. Releases these digital downloads. Pretty cool stuff. And then if you happen to be wanting actual donations from around the world, you can use this all-in-one WPML crowdfunding campaign plugin, and it will actually translate some of the items with the Fundify theme, ensuring that you have correct translations for everything that you've got going on. So it's zero configuration. You just install it, set it, and forget it, and it's ready to go.
And so I think that's really cool because you can have all these different language websites, but you could have everything funneled back into the same campaign.
Yeah, we even talked about at the onset of the show, you know, Vietnam getting into their own WordCamp and such. Well, now they can start to participate in the funding as well, and vice versa. You know, WordPress functionality is the language that we all speak, right? So what better way to kind of get us all, you know, it may be a lot cheaper for us to fund somebody in another country who can, you know, code at a cheaper rate yet still get us all the functionality. I'm not advocating outsourcing or anything like that, but we all use it around the globe.
So that wraps it up for this edition of WordPress Weekly. I got to say I'm very impressed with the knowledge shared. Again, I want to thank my guests, Scott Kingsley Clark, John Saddington, and Nick Haskins for being on the show. I had no idea, you know, as I've mentioned before, I just think it's fascinating the difficulties involved with, A, getting the funding and running the campaign, but all of the things you have to worry about and think of after the fact. And sometimes, you know, if it's your first campaign, those lessons can be hard to learn. And I'm very thankful for these gentlemen to share their hard lessons learned so that others can learn from them and not make the same mistakes if they want to participate in a crowdfunding campaign. And I'll just ask you, Marcus, based on everything you heard, what's the one or two takeaways from the show?
Well, easily, it's that people undershoot themselves as far as the money that's being required. So ask for more, and you know, when you get more, that's great because it's going to handle those intangibles that you didn't think about, like support and even... you know, another takeaway is the tchotchkes and the little giveaways and goodies that people give away. If you've got, you know, as John pointed out, you know, 500 people that you've got to then enter into a system and print labels out and get boxes and envelopes and things like that, that takes away from your production time of what you wanted to do in the first place, which was get the code right and put something out there. So a lot of different things will sidetrack you within this process, and I think this show is a valuable stick, so to speak, that you could dip into the mud and figure out exactly how deep you're willing to go and see if crowdfunding is a solution for your project.
Well said, well said. So that's going to do it for this week's edition of the show. I'm going to make a little announcement here. I don't know if anybody's going to be able to listen to a whole hour and a half show, but for those that do, sure. I'm going to try something new next week. The special guest on the show is going to be me, Jeff Chandler, and we're going to try something a little fun and interesting here. I'm going to be interviewed by Marcus Couch.
So, that's right.
Well, so we'll see how that goes. I think what it will do is it give me an opportunity to maybe talk about some things I normally don't get to talk about, and it'll be fun for once for me to be the guy, you know, being interviewed. Just hopefully, you know, Marcus has good questions, softballs. Yeah. I'll give him some softballs.
No, you're going to be on the hot seat. This is like Nixon Frost here. This
right.
A drama. People aren't going to want to miss this.
All right. So you can get show notes for this episode and all previous episodes on WPTavern.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at Jeffro, that's JeffFR0. Marcus, how about yourself?
You can find my website at MarcusCouch.com and follow me on Twitter at MarcusCouch. And you can also check out the other show that I'm involved in, which is WordPress Plugins A to Z. You can find that at WPPluginsA2Z.com and on Twitter at WPPluginsA2Z.
Fantastic. So that's a wrap. And everybody have a safe and enjoyable weekend. We'll talk to you next week.